Mix, huh? William, it's very nice to meet you.
It's good to meet you. We've been talking a bit on WeChat, and then this is good to just turn it into the convo, you know?
You met my business partner in person, right, in China?
Yes.
Okay.
We're at this event, and great, great event. This was a really good mixer, and I'm chatting with him, and he's like, yo, I gotta introduce you to my boy from New York, travels around, and he's into collecting. Kind of old school collecting. Not just paintings. I'm like, great, let's do it. So that was your one-liner.
I see.
My boy into collecting.
That's amazing. I grew up in Durham, North Carolina, basically 5 minutes from Duke University, 10 minutes from University of North Carolina, in that basketball environment my entire life. And growing up, I was like a massive sneaker collector. One of very few people in my school actually like collecting sneakers. And so buying sneakers off of players from Duke basketball and UNC who had just graduated. So I was buying some very exclusive sneakers only made specifically for Duke basketball players and also UNC players. And I specifically were getting the shoes off of players who had just graduated college. Because of that, you know, that started to open some doors for me in the sneaker world from the sense of, you know, certain sneaker blogs started to reach out to me. They said, you know, you obviously have some unique access to information about shoes coming to, you know, two of the top basketball schools in the country. If maybe you could provide some inside scoop as to what's coming to those schools, and in return, we would post your sneaker photos. And I said, yeah, sure. Because of that, a lot of celebrities started to discover me through all these blogs, social media posts, guys, bunch of NBA stars and hip hop stars who many of them were very enthusiastic about collecting sneakers just like me. But I was also a huge sports card collector as well. So when I was kind of the only one collecting cards, I was thinking, yo, this seems really, really strange that I'm like the only one out of my friend circle doing this. And I was kind of embarrassed.
Yeah.
We're talking like late 90s, early 2000s. And I would just be like quietly cracking packs of cards when my parents were sleeping. And when I moved up to New York, I actually started working at a hedge fund called Libermax Capital. It's actually featured in the Big Short movies. And I want to really explore, you know, kind of business beyond this kind of hedge fund world and do things that, you know, I'm interested in, not what my parents are interested in for me. So I end up leaving. Yeah. So my uncle owns the number one auction house, domestic auction house in China. And so I always knew I would do some business in China. So I thought, well, I'm passionate about basketball. I want to explore business beyond just like, you know, being a sneaker dealer. And you know, I was flipping sneakers during that time. And I also wanted to kind of explore my relationships with a lot of the athletes further as well. You know, I didn't want to just be like a sneaker dealer to these players, but I wanted to also explore business with a lot of these athletes as well. So I started this youth basketball training company where I was flying NBA level trainers over to China to train students in basketball. We were even collaborating with Li Nan, who's the head coach of the China national basketball team. But I think the aspect of our business that was more unique was we were also flying students from China to North Carolina to see if maybe they wanted to study abroad. And so I did that business as a way to kind of help Duke and UNC players connect with Chinese fans and meet with fans prior to going to NBA. And so during my time doing that, that's kind of when I met my business partner, Steven. And he was basically rounding up students to attend our camps in the US. I built up a very unique sneaker collection, you know, obviously, you know, doing trades with different NBA stars for their exclusive pairs. And so I got invited by Phillips Auction to do a sneaker showcase on my sneaker collection in China. And back in December 2019, as we were doing our camp business, so I flew about $1 million worth of sneakers to China. You know, we were preparing for this event with Phillips Auction, but unfortunately, it ended up being canceled due to COVID. And so Steve and I are sitting in China with $1 million worth of sneakers in his apartment. We're thinking, what are we going to do to pivot our business? So he says, you know what? I think Chinese social media is going to be the next big thing. And so he ends up showing me a Douyin account, Chinese TikTok of an NBA star named Kristaps Porzingis. I don't know if you're familiar, but he was actually playing on the New York Knicks at the time, actually a good friend of mine. I took one look at the account. I realized whoever was running his social media account did not know him personally because they were posting some like bullshit content on his social media. So I ended up reaching out to him. I said, hey, do you know who's running your Chinese social media? And he said, I have no clue what's being posted on there. So we thought, okay, you know, there could be a very unique opportunity to do this. I'm thinking, gosh, you know, I've never done content in my life. How are we going to test this thing out? So we end up opening my personal Bilibili, which is, I guess, considered like Chinese YouTube. We started with a 1 minute long video that I had in my library, DJ Khaled talking about me in a sneaker store. And basically it was an event that was We the Best. And it was here in New York. I went to the event. You know, he's been a good friend of mine for many years. I've been supplying him with a lot of very rare sneakers. We're at this event and he's like, just starts going on a very DJ Khaled-esque rant, basically saying, yo, you know, Barney's like my secret key in the shoe world. And he was just like ranting for about a minute long. And I was thinking, dude, this is, it's actually like a little bit uncomfortable. That video ended up surpassing 100,000 views in 24 hours. So we thought, okay, you know, we're definitely on to something. And Onyeka Okongwu at that time was about to enter the NBA draft. He was a top 10 prospect. He ended up being the number 6 pick in the NBA draft. So we started with 3 2-minute long videos of him just saying hey to China. And he was also the first NBA player ever on Bilibili, Chinese YouTube. Those 3 2-minute long videos surpassed over 10 million views in 1 week of time. Because we launched Onyeka Okongwu, that obviously opened a ton of doors for us. We ended up launching, you know, DJ Khaled exclusively in China, Fat Joe, Cade Cunningham, who was the number one pick in the NBA draft 3 years ago. None of these things would be possible without my passion for sneakers. And so, yeah, that business is still ongoing. It's called Monarch. The reason why it's called Monarch is because the Monarch butterfly is probably the most recognizable U.S. butterfly in the world. We're dealing with the most recognizable U.S. celebrities in the world. And the way the butterfly travels is kind of fluttering around, very similar to how we kind of see our celebrities also exploring China market with us. And so, you know, I got into Web3 probably back in 2021, August, I would say. And a lot of my friends were sneaker collectors. And I'll tell you this, but what happened before COVID was sneakers actually popped off around probably 2010 to around 2016. Those were like very, very hot years for collecting sneakers. And, you know, the sneaker market probably cooled down probably from 2016 and on. And so that was kind of a time period where many of us sneaker collectors started to have to kind of pivot our interest in collectibles and start to explore other collectibles. And so I think around 2021, August, a lot of my sneaker collecting friends were actually buying NFTs. And so they said, you know, they kind of approached me probably very similar to how many people were approached about getting into NFTs. Hey, buy these projects, you know, don't ask any questions. Over those next few months, I'm just getting rugged left and right, just testing things, buying different NFTs. And then around December 2021, I actually got approached by an artist who I was actually collecting named Edgar Plants. And he had obviously heard about my relationship with DJ Khaled and wanted to get DJ Khaled involved in the project in some way. And I said, yeah, that sounds like a no-brainer. So the fans in sneaker collecting are also very sticky. So he was acquiring all the rare shoes on the planet. And that obviously built him a huge fan base. And now he's actually the first hip-hop artist signed to Jordan Brand. So it was a natural conversation for us to get DJ Khaled involved. And so we ended up getting him this honorary one-of-one little hero for DJ Khaled with the Edgar Plans project. And the Edgar project actually popped off. I think it was like number one on OpenSea for like a few weeks straight. Well, here we are now opening our Monarch Web3 hub. And it's basically a community of all top collectors, from watch collectors to fashion collectors like Chrome Hearts, traditional art collectors, digital art collectors, sneaker collectors. We also want to onboard more traditional collectors into the digital world. So that's a little bit of background on myself and also how I got started. All of this would stem from my sneaker collecting passions.
I love it. But in general, there's a level of transparency and accountability inside of NFTs and similar tech that can be applied to other valuable things. Yeah. So I'll give you one example. So luxury watch brand Breitling is a client of mine. Every watch you buy comes with an NFT. Mm. Every one of them, right? So they use this as a certificate of authenticity because you can't copy them. Okay, so for you personally as a collector of rare, one-of-a-kind, not general public shoes, this is all based on your reputation.
Yeah.
To say that definitely. They're not fake.
Yes.
Do you think that this has any type of an opportunity specifically for valuable luxury things that are kind of hard to trace?
Yeah, definitely. In terms of authenticity, you're saying?
Yeah.
I also think to me, collectibles is all about storytelling, right? And so I think you can imagine for me personally, when I deal with like prototype sneakers, they come from very unique places, right? There's actually a story in every, like, I'll give you an example. These are game issued Kobe Bryant sneakers that were made for him to wear, but he actually tore his Achilles this year. So he wasn't able to wear it, but they're dual signed. So like, they're like these shoes, you don't just find them in a store, right? So obviously the aspect of where they come from also could add value. And I think the thing with collectibles in general is also education. Like for me as a big sports collector, you know, sports card collector, I look at like a product like NBA Top Shot, for example. It's actually a great product to me. You know, like if you look at like sports cards, right, it's like a photo of like LeBron James just like dribbling a basketball, probably in like a random facility, right? Really, the only thing of value are rookie cards or autograph cards or maybe like game-worn jersey cards.
Well, because they're limited. There's something that makes a rookie card limited. It's because there's a single run.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you look at like Top Shot, it can actually pinpoint very specific moments in time for players, right? And now they've added like different badges, like, oh, this is from a championship year, or this is actually from his rookie year. And I think it's actually a more defined product than sports cards. But the thing is I don't really see a lot of sport card collectors buying Top Shot. And I think that's kind of a lack of education in terms of bringing kind of more traditional collectors into the scene. I think in Monarch, we also care very deeply about and having more conversations and crossover between bringing more traditional collectors into the digital collecting space.
So yeah, you and I both, brother, you know, we're trying to learn and teach and, you know, just find the opportunities.
Yeah. And I also tell you this too, it's a long process. You know, digital artists should be really thoughtful about providing that kind of white glove service to educate, you know, collectors more properly so that way they can understand. Because there was an instance before where we were talking to a digital artist manager, and there was a conversation around buying a $250,000 piece, but it does not come with the installation. It doesn't come with the screens. It doesn't come with this. And it's like, okay, so you expect someone to spend $250,000 and it just rot in the guy's wallet, you know?
The NFT, I really think the value, my thesis is that the value does not come from the artwork of the NFT or even the artist. It comes from the community and the experiences. My thesis on Bored Ape Yacht Club is that, I'm just going to say it sounds dumb, but the reason people buy Bored Ape Yacht Club is because they know Justin Bieber owns one and they want to meet him. And if they don't meet him or they don't want to meet him, they know someone else wants to meet him, and that's where the value is coming from.
Sure.
Like, those are all the behind the scenes stuff that, unfortunately for us, people come in, they're like, oh, this is easy, right? I want to copy that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think kind of the interesting thing between like traditional art and digital art is like, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of crossover, like meaning traditional art collectors are not really buying digital art and vice versa yet. I do think there will be a huge crossover there where that kind of line gets a little bit muddier.
No, this was a thoughtful conversation, guys. I was put on to Champagne Wave with my girlfriend. My girlfriend collects sneakers and flips sneakers as well. And she's like, really gave me a perspective, like the Jordan cycles and everything. I guess upcoming artists, maybe what advice would you provide them? Because there's so many echo chambers in the space and a lot of like upcoming artists that like don't have maybe IRL experience. And maybe you could provide some insight, like how they could approach this digital collectibles with your experience in the sneaker culture.
Yeah, I think I think it's really important to test new things all the time. You know, it's a crazy time to be an artist, but you know, you really have to be constantly evolving, constantly pivoting. You are your business. You should look at it as like you're a startup, right? And you should be, you know, talking to your collectors, really learning what do they like about your work, and like what would you, you know, like to see as an improvement. So I think those are some things that like I would stress to any artist, is that like, you know, they really have to be thoughtful and really like tap into your collector base, like do some, you know, it's like customer discovery, right? To some degree, right? It's like really learning, like, you know, why do you buy my work, right? And like learn it, and then continuously evolving, because it's just, it, Instagram has just made it so accessible. You can find anyone now. Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Can I ask another question?
Of course.
Yeah, so like maybe like, because, okay, I think collecting art and creating art is a unique private experience, right?
Yeah.
Maybe can you touch on maybe your approach on how you maybe discover artists, your thesis behind collecting, and like how you, like, I don't know, like how does it fit into your existing collection? Time here is very like quick, like, so maybe you can just touch on that.
Yeah, so maybe I can share like more of like a personal practice for myself. So as I said, with like social media giving you so much access, you know, to me, I've met a lot of artists, whether they're traditional artists or digital artists, and just from my personal kind of viewpoint, a lot of artists are fake. You know, they're like either faking like a component of who they are, whether it's like, you know, they have like some kind of mental kind of thing that they're trying to, you, like, it's like all like a story about like why to buy their work, right? So to me, it's like finding good art is actually very difficult nowadays, because it's like there's so much copycat art. The way I look at it is like, okay, if I were to be like in a different country and I, there's a work 50 feet away from me and I see it, I know that's Edgar Plans or that's Cause. Like I can identify that very quickly. Like you have like a unique style. I think that's something that, you know, is really important to me. And I want to find, you know, artwork that, you know, probably no one else can do, or probably, you know, it's got to be something that I also can't do either, right? Like if I can draw it, then probably something I'm not too interested in.
I really appreciate you answering that question. This was a cool space and conversation. I look forward to like hearing from you guys more often.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for tapping in. Yeah. Thanks so much. And I encourage everyone to chase their passions for sure. You never know where it'll take you.